Radio.
Anybody or anything in between or even off the fucking scale entirely, it's time for your latest dose of your favorite station not sweeping the nation. Oh, just hanging, just living, just mwah, killing it right here in this location. You know I love you and I know you love to be loved. So let me introduce myself for any of the newbies driving through the boonies of the world who haven't heard this little piece of freakdom before. I am the Emperor of the Wasteland at Hand, your cosmic guide through this cosmic ride tonight. The one that's about to connect your mind to the universe and the universe to your mind, Mr. Wormbait Jones. And we've got some talking to do right now, unless I'm very much mistaken, which I never yet have been. We've got a lot of things to get to because this is Broadcast Station US fucking A-76, and it's time I tell you the truth about the world. Right now, we're floating around the small county of Moffat, Colorado. It is a brisk 32 degrees outside, and the connection, is fucking amazing. Let me tell you that from the inside out, upside down, and any other way you might want it. We're gonna kick it off with some news tonight, because sometimes that's just the way it works. Our story comes to us from the leaky and creaky trailer owned by Mrs. Peggy Ann Johannesson and the former Otis Johannesson before the events that we happen to be talking about just now. As the story goes, Mrs. Johannesson was doing some reading in a big black book she got from a big gray man with small quail eggs where both of his eyes should have been. The man didn't need it anymore because, as any child will be only too happy to tell you, you can't read a goddamn thing if you got eggs for eyes. Truth from the mouth, babes, as all of my mothers used to say. So reading from this big black book was kind of the same thing as asking strangers what they would like to carve into your chest today, and then handing them the dull spoon for which to be doing that exact thing. It's not a good idea, you see? And if you do that for long enough, you might start seeing the world in some weird ways and wanting to do some weird things in those weird ways. And Mrs. Johannesson did it for a very long time indeed. You see, Mrs. Johannesson, that poor little thing, she got it into her weird old head that her husband Otis just didn't love her no more. And this made her all kinds of sad, don't you know? Because Otis and her had been sweethearts for a very, very long time. Ever since she was 8 and Otis was 4, and they were trying to have a little baby for themselves in the ways the kids do. Oh, ain't it lovely? And this big black book started giving her some funky ideas about love and about holistic feelings permeating body tissue. Not to mention a few ideas about the kind of music that they needed to be listening to in their little trailer and the funkiness quotient thereof. She needed him to feel the beat within his feet and have that funky shit travel right up and out of his third eye into her root chakra, and then and only then would they be truly one and truly deserving of that most overused term, sweethearts. Mrs. Mrs. Johannesson, who had been brought into this world under the name of Peggy Ann, but lost that to the book as well, she thought she could remember a time in which they were truly connected in such a cosmic fucking manner. Sometime earlier, when their backs didn't ache for no damn reason, and their hatred of the world was condensed into the 3 nights out of the month where they threw beer bottles at any policeman they could find. She didn't know exactly when they had lost it, but she had a pretty good idea of how she was going to get it back. This fine lady, this absolute gem of a wife and a lover, she marched herself down to the nursing home where Otis kept his mother so she didn't go wandering into traffic again. It was a drippy and damp motherfucker of a place, but Otis's mother had never said two kind words in a row her entire life, so any pity that might be wasted on her when you're hearing this should instead be collected in a small bucket for the rainy season. It always pays to be prepared, you know. The nameless Peggy Ann walked right up to Otis's mother, asleep in her bed, all wrapped up in dirty blankets, don't you know? Oh, they're the best kind. You want a blanket with some texture to it. Don't lie to me now. And Peggy Ann took those blankets away, leaving the old woman shivering and skinny in her age and nude appearance. She took that old woman's legs, and she forced her head up inside that place that her lover had once descended from in a shower of blood and shit and pain. And Peggy Ann stepped and squeezed herself right up into this old woman's body, only getting stuck for a second because she still had her shoes on, and they just would not fit down this old lady's skinny legs. That skin that used to hang in folds like a map of fucking time was all pulled taut again, nice and tight, like an overfilled sausage casing just getting ready to burst with all of its juices getting all bubbly like, Peggy Ann's eyes squeezed out the old woman's and they fell into the pile of dirty blankets, where at least they'd be warm until they were wanted again. And so Peggy Ann, the nameless and now shrouded Peggy Ann, walked herself right back out of the dirty nursing home and into that dirty air that surrounded it, only ripping her new suit in a couple of places that don't need mentioning in this polite society we find ourselves in. The feet and the toes got a little banged up and a little dirty, a little broken, but Otis had never cared much about her feet before, and she supposed he wasn't about to start now. Peggy Ann made it almost all the way home in that old woman's skin when she happened to glance at a car passing by. And what was inside that car nearly broke this poor woman's heart right in two. Otis. Her Otis. That might have been, could have been, maybe even was at one point, sweetheart of hers. He was in the passenger seat of a 1952 Roadmaster, red on black with big white wall tires, and he was sucking and mucking about on the floppy titties of a woman wearing the skin of his sister and chanting obscure and sacrilegious poetry to the beat of a Glenn Miller song. Well, poor nameless Peggy Ann just sat herself right on the curb and cried, and cried, and cried some more. She cried so much about what she had just seen that she managed to fill up any leftover space in that old woman's flesh she wore, and poor nameless Peggy Ann drowned right there on the side of the road in her own tears. And that, my gracious listeners, is the end of the news for now. And I think we're all a little better for having heard that, don't you? Now, I don't know about you, but I'm shaking and quaking like some pan-fried bacon. Because it's just been so long since we've had a report from one of our people on the ground, in the thick of it, right at ground motherfucking zero. So why don't we just toss it right on over to our volunteer reporter in the field, Miss Daphne DeLoree-Savarano.
In the desert, I saw a creature, naked, bestial, who, squatting upon the ground, held his heart in his hands and ate of it. I said, "Is it good, friend?" "Bitter," he answered. "But I like it, because it is bitter, and because it is my heart." "Mr. Jones, there's nothing but elephants out here, and they're all skinny enough that you could see their ribs." "Mr. Jones, the moon has begun to break in half. Please stand by for the routine transmission." "Mr. Jones, the elephants have all broken each other's front left kneecap. It's just like we assumed. Every day is the goddamn same, isn't it?"
"Thank you, thank you, thank you, Miss DeLoree-Savarano. It's always both enlightening and lovely when you choose to drop on by our little show. In whatever form you feel the need, the speed, and the greed to be taken. And let's talk about greed for a moment. That wild little fucking bug that lives in the back of your head and makes you think you deserve better than the tiny piece of scratch you've managed to carve your name into for the time being. Let's talk about greed. Let's talk about people wanting things from you that you just aren't ready to give them. Let's talk about how we're all getting fat right around our brains and it's starting to squish right down into every damn hole and crease it can find. Let's talk about how we keep this show on the air as well as down underground for that good old Earth Mother sound. Let's talk about who keeps the lights on around here. We'll be back real soon. Cause you know we can't just let you go like that. And don't you dare turn away. I want you to look me in the eyes when I hurt you."
"Hey there. I'm just like you. When I come home after a long day, I like things to be where I left them. I like a peaceful house. I like my dinner on the table, my laundry folded, and my children achieving better things than I ever could.
I just don't want to get hit again every day, no matter what I do. I just don't want to get hit again.
But sometimes I get home and things just aren't up to snuff. And when days like that come around, I'll admit it, I tend to get a little bit angry."
"It was one thing when it was just me, but now that it's become the children too, I just don't know what to do. I just don't know where we can go. I feel so trapped."
"Thankfully, when days like those come around, I know I can reach for my trusty little sidekick. It's called my rage. I pop a couple of pills of pure, untainted fair trade anger, and before long, I can't even remember what I was stressed about in the first place."
"If anybody can help, if anybody even cares, my name is Janie Adams. My children are Ethan and Tabitha. If anybody can..."
"It's called my rage, and it's the solution to all my problems."
And we are back. but you already knew that from the way you just started feeling so good. I've got a little bit of feeling about that. But enough about my feelings. Let's talk about your feelings for a while. Let's really just break that head wide open, scoop that beautiful brain out into a sink, and have ourselves a little whore's bath in your thoughts now. Does that sound good to you? Does that sound fucking pleasurable? Oh, that's a little rude attitude there, isn't it? Look at me, asking questions I already know the answer to. What would my mother say? Well, between you and me, they wouldn't say much. Most of them didn't have any tongues. That's enough of my secrets and enough of my stalling. It's time to fire up the connection machine. The lines are open. The way forward is buttery smooth, and I want to hear that sweet, sweet voice of yours. Who do we have first? Who's gonna be the brave one? Who's feeling the excitement? Who's ready to rock and fucking roll? Oh, Moffat County, I knew I could count on you to be sweet tonight. I just knew it. I could feel it. I could smell it. I could taste it. Let's see what we've got going on here and now.
Hello. My name is Madeline. Madeline Taylor. I have a problem, and it keeps getting worse. I have a house. It was left to me. I'm nobody special. The house has 5 rooms, a small basement, and a yard with a bent chain-link fence. 3 weeks ago, a new door appeared at the end of a hallway I'd never seen before. When I opened it, I saw a small stage with 3 folding chairs facing it. On the stage, a collection of 5 people, all well into the later half of their life, sat tuning black instruments. A piano, a bass, a clarinet, a trumpet, and a drummer sat behind a set that seemed to have been carved from volcanic stone. I was too stunned to speak, but the woman sat at the piano, with a golden halo of hair that hid most of her face. She turned to me and said, "Not yet. Soon enough, but not quite yet." And I blinked, and found myself outside of my house altogether, staring at the door like it held any answer to the million questions in my head. And when I tried again, the process repeated itself. For 3 days, all I would hear is the gentle tuning of instruments and the voice of an old lady saying, "Not yet. Soon enough, but not quite yet." On the morning of the 4th day, something had changed. When I entered, the bassist and the drummer were sat very quietly and at attention. They had obviously finished tuning. Yet again, the old woman with the golden hair turned and spoke, but her message had changed. "Very soon now, be ready." This time, I found myself on the street later that night. Hours had passed, and I had no recollection of where I was or what I did. I was 2.5 miles from my home. This happened twice more, and each time I found myself at a different place, and each time it was slightly later into the night. On the morning of the 7th day, there was a thunderstorm. The sun barely illuminated anything within the house. I stood in front of the new door at the end of my new hallway. The energy had changed. You could feel it. You could almost see it, like wavy air over a highway in summer. The door swung inward, and I saw that 2 of the 3 folding chairs had been taken over by men in suits who had nothing but empty void above their collars. They turned to look at me, but I could only tell by the shifting of their torsos. The void was the same all the way around.
The clarinet player and the trumpet player had also finished their tuning, and the pianist kept playing a single note that seemed to reverberate in the center of my skull. I felt all around me an aura of impending doom, of some horrific evil barely held at bay. Somewhere in that room, folded away into the air itself, maybe, there was tragedy. There was terror. There was that which some simply refer to as the darker piece of life. With a start, I noticed that all eyes in the room had locked on mine. In a voice that held new power somehow, the pianist addressed me.
"Please, join us."
That single note pounded itself into my head again and again, and with each repetition, I could feel something drain from the deep parts of my brain, the ancient pieces that were screaming for me to run from the room. Had it not been for the thunderstorm, I'm sure I would have taken a seat then and there. A low rumble was suddenly split by a harsh crack as lightning landed somewhere nearby. The smell of ozone tinged the air, and the smell of power, and the smell of something old, something that had been with the earth far longer than humans. Longer than life, maybe. Something closer to the forces that bind the universe together than the beings that inhabit the spaces they create. In my brief moment of clarity from the lightning, I forced myself back through the doorway, moving as though each limb weighed 10 times what it does. As I raised my arm to grip the knob and close the door, I could see that the two men in suits had risen to their feet and turned to face me. The darkness that lay where their heads should have been was absolute. I closed the door and collapsed. I lived in that house for 82 more years, and that hallway never left. And each day of those 82 years, there was a piece of my brain, one of the deep, ancient pieces that had been touched by the note from the piano, that fixated on that last chair in the room and what might happen if I were to take it and let the show begin. And for 82 years, I managed to resist that urge. Not easily, not gracefully, but I resisted. And I found myself both old and tired and ready to be finished with the cares of this world. I had held my torch and was ready to pass it on to whomever might come next. 3 weeks ago, I woke up and found myself young again. And the date, when I checked it, was that same date when I had resisted the urge for the first time and closed the door against the music. I never forgot that date. I will never forget that date. I resisted as best I could. I didn't open that door for a lifetime. But I don't know if I can do it again. I have a young body, but my soul is tired, so tired, and my willpower has almost reached its end. I've been hearing the note. I don't think that woman ever stopped playing. I think she's been there. I think they all have. Waiting. Waiting for me to take my place. I have a problem, and it's getting worse. My name is Madeline. Madeline Taylor. Goodbye.
And after that, I don't think there's too much more to say for this evening. Moffat County, you've been wonderful, but I knew you would be. You always are. For anybody out there that's still getting their pay and making their way down this old highway called life, don't be afraid to swing off the highway every once in a while. Peek around a dark corner, turn over stone and roll around in whatever you find crawling around underneath. Now maybe, just maybe now, baby now, maybe someday you'll see this old radio van cruising along beside you. If you're real unlucky, maybe we'll just choose to stop wherever you do. Maybe you'll get to meet old Wormbait Jones, get a little interview going on, really get to know each other all personal-like. But for now, this little thing wasn't anything but a nightmare, and it's time for you to wake on up and forget us, right? This is Wormbait Jones, signing off from Moffat County, Colorado. Genuine Radio Broadcast, USA-76.
Genuine Radio is voiced by Joe Hansen, Chris Northcutt, Edward Hoffman, Monty D. Montalegre, Edie Pierce, Alice Stillwell, and Ramey O. Washington. Genuine Radio was created by Alexander Wolf and is a production of Wolf Mountain Workshop. Tune in. Breakdown.